You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show.
We're continuing our look at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. We're looking at the chapter about growth and protection. And we're talking about the HPA axis, which is known as the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. Activating the HPA axis interferes with our ability to think clearly. The processing of information in the forebrain, the center of executive reasoning and logic, is significantly slower than the reflex activity controlled by the hindbrain. In an emergency, the faster the information processing, the more likely the organism will survive. Adrenal stress hormones constrict the blood vessels in the forebrain, reducing the ability to function. Additionally, the hormones repress activity in the brain's prefrontal cortex, the center of conscious volition action. In an emergency, the vascular flow and hormones serve to activate the hindbrain, the source of life-sustaining reflexes that most effectively control flight or fight behavior. While it is necessary that stress signals repress the slower processing conscious mind to enhance survival, this comes at a cost: diminished conscious awareness and reduced intelligence. The next section we're going to look at is called Fear Kills. Remember the shell-shocked, frozen look on my Caribbean medical students' faces when they failed my test, the medical school equivalent of a voracious lion. Had my students stayed frozen in fear, I can guarantee you that they would have performed dismally on their finals. The simple truth is, when you're frightened, you're dumber. Teachers see it all the time among students who don't test well. Exam stress paralyzes these students who, with trembling hands, marked wrong answers because in their panic, they can't access cerebral stored information that they've carefully acquired all semester. The HPA system is a brilliant mechanism for handling acute stresses. However, this protective system is not designed to be continuously activated. In today's world, most of the stresses we are experiencing are not in the form of acute, concrete threats that we can easily identify, respond to, and move on. We are, on the other hand, constantly besieged by multitudes of unresolvable worries about our personal lives, our jobs, our income, our war-torn global community, and so on. Such worries do not threaten our immediate survival. But they do, however, nevertheless, activate the HPA axis, resulting in chronically elevated stress hormones. To more clearly illustrate the adverse effects of sustained adrenaline, let's use an example of a track race. An extremely well-trained and healthy group of sprinters lines up on the starting line. When they hear the command, "On your marks," they get on their hands and knees and adjust their feet in the starting blocks. When the starter barks out, "Get set," the athlete's muscles tighten as they prop themselves up on their fingers and toes. When they shift into get set mode, their bodies release the flight-promoting adrenaline hormones that power their muscles for the arduous task ahead. While the athletes are on hold awaiting the go command, their bodies are straining in anticipation of that task. In a normal race, that strain lasts only a second or two before the starter yells go. However, in our mythical race, the go command, which would launch the athletes into action, never comes. The athletes are left in the starting blocks, their blood coursing with adrenaline, their bodies fatiguing with the strain of preparing for the race that apparently never comes. No matter how toned their physique, within seconds, these athletes will physically collapse from the strain. We find ourselves living in a get-set world. An increasing body of research suggests that our hyper-vigilant lifestyle is severely impacting the health of our bodies. Our daily stressors are constantly activating the HPA axis, priming our bodies for action. Unlike competitive athletes, the stresses in our bodies are not released from the pressures generated by our chronic fears and concerns. Almost every major illness that people acquire has been linked to chronic stress. In a revealing study published in a 2003 edition of Science, researchers carefully considered why patients on SSRI antidepressants such as Prozac or Zoloft didn't feel better right away. There was, strangely enough, usually at least a 2-year lag between starting the drugs and the time the patients felt that they were getting better. The study found that depressed people exhibited a surprising lack of cell division in the region of the brain called the hippocampus, a part of the nervous system involved with memory. Hippocampal cells renewed cell division at the time patients first began to experience the mood-shifting effect of the SSR drugs, weeks after the onset of the drug regime. This study and others challenged the theory that depression is simply the result of chemical imbalance, affecting the brain's production of monoamine signaling chemicals, specifically serotonin. If it were as simple as that, the SSR drugs would likely restore that chemical balance right away. More researchers are pointed to the inhibition of the neuronal growth by stress hormones as a source of depression. In fact, in chronically depressed patients, the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex, the center of higher reasoning, are physically shrunken. A review of this study published in the magazine Science reported, quote, "Overtaking the monoamine hypothesis in recent years has been the stress hypothesis, with posits that depression is caused when the brain's stress machinery goes into overdrive. The most prominent player in this theory is the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal or HPA axis. The HPA axis effect is on the cellular community and mirrors the effect of stress on the human population. Picture a vibrant community back in the Cold War years, when the possibility of a nuclear attack by the Russians weighed heavily on many Americans' minds. Like cells in a multicellular organism, the members of this Cold War society actively work at jobs that contribute to the community's growth and usually get along well with each other. Factories are busy manufacturing, construction people are building new homes, grocery stores are selling food, and kids are in school learning their ABCs. The community is in a state of health and growth while its residents constructively interact towards a common goal. Suddenly, the sound of an air raid siren rocks the town. Everyone stops working to run off, seeking the safety of the bomb shelters. The harmony of the community is disrupted as individuals acting only in support of their own survival fight their way to a bomb shelter. After 5 minutes, the all-clear signal sounds. Residents return to their jobs and resume their lives in a growing community. But what would happen if the sirens sound and the residents run into their air raid shelters and there's no all-clear signal to release them? People would be forced to stay in their protective postures indefinitely. Question is, how long could they maintain their protective postures? In fact, the community would eventually collapse in the face of dwindling food and water supplies. One by one, even the strongest die because chronic stress is paralyzing. A community can easily survive short-term stress, like an air raid drill. But when the stress goes on and on and on, it results in cessation of growth and the eventual breakdown of the whole community. Another illustration is the influence of stress on a population is the story of the 9/11 tragedy. Up to the moment the terrorists attacked, the country was in a state of growth. Then immediately after 9/11, as the shock of the news spread to reach not just the people of New York, but the entire nation, the United States experienced a threat to its survival. The impact of government proclamations stressing the continued presence of danger in the wake of the attack was like the influence of adrenal signals. They shifted the members of the community from a state of growth to a state of protection. After a few days of this heart-stopping fear, the country's economic vitality was so compromised that the president had to intervene. To stimulate growth, the president repeatedly emphasized, America is open for business. It took a while for the fears to subside and for the economy to rebound. However, the residual threats of terrorism are still paralyzing the vitality of the United States. As a nation, the United States should look more carefully about how its fear of the future acts of terrorism is undermining the quality of life of its citizens. In some sense, the terrorists have already won since they've succeeded in frightening the U.S. population into a chronic, soul-sapping protective mode. I'd also like to suggest that my audience examine how your fears and the ensuing protective behaviors impact your life. What fears are stunting your growth? Where did these fears come from? Are they necessary? Are they real? Are they contributing to a full life? We'll deal more with these fears and where to get them in the next chapter on conscious parenting. If we can control our fears, we can regain control of our lives. President Franklin D. Roosevelt knew the destructive nature of fear. He chose his words carefully when he told the nation the grips of the Great Depression and the looming World War. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Letting go of our fears is the first step toward creating a fuller, more satisfying life for us and the people around us.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC. But it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF, 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. We're now starting Chapter 7, Conscious Parenting, Parents as Genetic Engineers. No doubt you've heard the seductive argument that once parents bestow their genes on their children, they take a back seat in their children's lives. Parents need only refrain from abusing their children, feed and clothe them, and then wait to see where their pre-programmed genes lead them. This notion allows parents to continue with their pre-kid lives. They can simply drop their children off at a daycare and with babysitters. It's an appealing idea for busy and or lazy parents. It's also appealing for parents like me, who have biological children with radically different personalities. I used to think that my daughters were different because they inherited different sets of genes from the moment of conception, a random selection process in which their mother and I had no part. After all, I thought, they grew up in the same environmental, bracket nurture and bracket, so the reason for their differences had to be genetic, open bracket, nature, close bracket. The reality I know now is very, very different. Frontier science is confirming that mothers and enlightened fathers have known forever that parents do matter, despite best-selling books that try to convince them otherwise. To quote Dr. Thomas Verdi, a pioneer in the field of prenatal and pre-prenatal psychiatry, findings in the peer-reviewed literature over the course of decades establish, beyond any doubt, that parents have overwhelming influence on the mental and physical attributes of the children they raise. And that influence starts, says Vimy, not only when children are born, but actually before the children are born. When Verney first posted the notion that the influence of parents extends even into the womb in his landmark 1981 book, The Secret Life of Unborn Children, the scientific evidence was preliminary and the experts skeptical, because scientists used to think that the human brain did not become functional until after birth. It was assumed that fetuses and infants had no memory and therefore felt no pain. After all, noted Freud, who coined the term infantile amnesia, most people do not remember anything that happened to them before they were 3 or 4 years old. However, experimental psychologists and neuroscientists are demolishing the myth that infants cannot remember, or for that matter, learn, along with it the notion that parents are simply spectators in the unfolding of their children's lives. The fetal and infant nervous systems have vast sensory and learning capabilities and a kind of memory that neuroscientists call implicit memory. Another pioneer in pre and prenatal psychology, David Chamberlain, writes in his book, The Mind of Your Newborn Baby, quote, "The truth is, much of what we have traditionally believed about babies is false. They are not simple beings, but complex and ageless. Small creatures with unexpectedly large thoughts." according to Chamberlain. These complex, small creatures have a pre-birth life in the womb that profoundly influences their long-term health and behavior. The quality of life in the womb, our temporary home before we were born, programs our susceptibility to coronary arterial disease, stroke, diabetes, obesity, and a multitude of other conditions in later life, wrote Dr. Peter W. Nathanielets in Life in the Womb, The Origin of Health and Disease. Presently, an even wider range of adult-related chronic disorders, including osteoporosis, mood disorders, and psychosis, has been intimately linked to pre- and prenatal developmental influences. Recognizing the role that prenatal environment plays in creating disease forces a reconsideration of genetic determinism. Nathanielets writes, quote, "There's a mounting evidence that programming of lifetime health by conditions in the womb is equally, if not more important than our genes in determining how we perform mentally and physically during this life." Gene myopia is the term that best describes the current all-pervasive view that our health and destiny throughout life are controlled by our genes alone. In contrast to the relative fatalism of gene myopia, understanding the mechanisms that underlie programming by the quality of life in the womb, it is possible to improve the start of life on children and their children. The programming mechanisms Nathanielets refers to are the epigenetic mechanisms discussed earlier, by which environmental stimuli generate gene activity. As Nathanael says, parents can improve the prenatal condition. In so doing, they act as genetic engineers for their children. The idea that parents can transmit hereditary changes from their life to their children's is, of course, a Lamarckian concept that conflicts with, obviously, Darwinism, which, unfortunately, is endorsed by the Catholic Church. Nathanielets is one of the scientists now brave enough to make the L word for Lamarck. The transgenerational passage of characteristics by non-genetic ones does occur. Lamarck was right, although transgeneration transmission of the acquired characteristics occurs by mechanisms that were unknown in his day. The responsiveness of individuals to the environmental conditions perceived by their mothers before birth allows them to optimize their genetic and psychological development as they adapt to the environmental forecast. The same life-enhancing epigenetic plasticity of human development can go awry and lead to an array of chronic diseases in older age. If an individual experiences adverse nutritional and environmental circumstances during fetal and neonatal periods of development, the same epigenetic influences also continue after the child is born, because parents continue to influence their child's environment. In particular, fascinating new research is emphasizing the importance of good parenting and development of the brain. For most important experiences influencing the expression of genes, which determines how neurons connect with one another in creating the neural pathways that give rise to our mental activity, Dr. Daniel Siegel, in his book The Developing Mind, Siegel, 1999, in other words, infants need nurturing environment to activate the genes to develop healthy brains. Parents, and the latest science reveals, continue to act as genetic engineers even after the birth of their child or children. Parental Programming, The Power of the Subconscious Mind. I'd like to tell you about how I, who put myself in the category of those who are not prepared to have children, came to question my ingrained assumptions about parenting. You won't be surprised to hear that I started my reevaluation in the Caribbean, the place where my shift to the new biology took root. My reassessment was actively inspired by an unlucky event, a motorcycle accident. I was on my way to present a lecture, and when I went off the curb at high speed, the bike wound up upside down. Luckily, I was wearing a helmet because I sustained a major blow to the head when the bike hit the ground. I was unconscious for half an hour, and for a while my students and colleagues thought I was dead. When I came to, I felt as if I'd broken every bone in my body. For the next few days, I could hardly walk, and when doing so, I resembled a yelping version of Quasimodo. Every step was a painful reminder of that what can do if you exceed the speed limit. As I creaked out of the classroom one afternoon, one of my students suggested she may be able to help if I visited his roommate, a fellow student, who is also a chiropractor. As I explained the last chapter, not only had he never been to a chiropractor, I had been taught by my allergic community to shun chiropractors as quarks and quacks. But when you're in so much pain and you're in an unfamiliar setting, you wind up increasing for things you would never consider in your cushier moments. At the chiropractor's makeshift dormitory office, I was introduced for the first time to kinesiology, popularly known as muscle testing. The chiropractor told out my arm and resist the downward pressure he applied on it. I had no problems resisting the light force he put on my arm. Then he asked me to hold out my arm again and resist him while saying, I said, "My name is Bruce." Again, I had no trouble resisting him. But now I was starting to think that the admonishments of my academic colleagues were right on the mark. They are nuts. Then a chiropractor told me to hold out my arm and resist the pressure while he was saying earnestly, "My name is Mary." To my amazement, my arm flopped down despite my strong resistance. "Now, wait a minute," I said. "I must not have been resting enough. Let's try again." So we did. And this time I concentrated more forcefully on resisting. Nevertheless, after repeating my name as Mary, my arm sunk like a stone. The student, who is now my teacher, explained that when your conscious mind has a belief that is in conflict with what you formerly learned, stored in your subconscious mind, the intellectual conflict expresses itself as a weakening of the body's miracles. And we certainly don't want that. So we're going to continue reading this book and examining the work of this author in the next shows. Once again, you are listening to The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. And we'll be continuing our examination of this really interesting books next class. So have a good week.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser.